Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon to you folks on the very first show of the year 2025, January 4th. Lost track of the dates already. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray, and we hope
that Nick will be joining us, hopefully.
Nope, I didn't get him.
Oh.
Did you get him over there?
Yeah, I got him.
I can see him talking, but I don't hear him talking.
We're trying something home going on right now, folks, so please be patient. Nick is at home trying to do a remote, and we're trying to get this set up so he can do that. And Steve and I are here in the studio taking your questions, and we'd like to remind you that you can give us a call at 585-966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415 with your computer questions. And we are here with for you for the next 2 hours.
Let's try. Oops, let me click this button. Try again, Nick. Testing. No, shoot.
He's queued up.
Do I have to be in the? Nope.
We did 10, 11, 12.
There it is. Got it. He's there.
There he is.
No, there he
is. Am I in?
No, you're in.
I'm in.
Hey,
how very exciting!
How you doing, my friend?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, who could be better than me?
No one. No one on the planet.
There you go.
Yep. So, as you heard, Steve and Dave are in the studio. I'm in Soundbite Central.
Yep.
On a mountaintop, high on a mountaintop above a small Midwestern city. For those of you who remember either Captain Midnight or yep. Jet Jackson.
Was it high on the top in Tennessee? Yeah.
That's mud with two D's. Anyway, that God bless Steve. Every week he does yeoman work to begin with.
Unbelievable.
Getting everything put together. This week, because I'm stuck at home with a bum knee, he, at the last minute, has put all this together. Did it take him a minute to get it running? Yes. Did he get it running? Absolutely. Hey. That's the important part.
There's just too many buttons.
Too many buttons.
Well, different configurations and everything else that he has to do, and I do here on the board, that we put it together and make the magic happen. And, yeah, it's the way it goes. And, hey, we're here for the folks to take their questions and still do a show. Matter of fact, the very first show for the year 2025.
Exactly right. And while you make that call at 585-966-JAZZ,
there's
that's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
There's some of the buttons Dave has to push.
Yeah.
What?
There's some of the buttons Dave has to push.
Dave has to push buttons. There's no question of that. But while you guys do that, I will read the news. Microsoft's 2025 is off to a bad start. Amid statistics that show users are still giving Windows 11 a wide berth, as Windows 10 continues to dominate the desktop operating system market. StatCounter's latest data indicates that Windows 11 lost about 1.5 points in 2 consecutive months. Windows 10, on the other hand, reclaimed some of its lost users, even though it will be out of mainstream support in less than 11 months. Tick, tick, people. Right now, Windows 10 remains the dominant Microsoft release, with a market share of almost 63% of the desktop market. It will be interesting to see what happens to it as we get closer to October 2025, of course, considering that many users cannot update their current PCs to Windows 11, and that Microsoft does not want to negotiate its steep hardware requirements, such as TPM 2.0. One theory is the earlier higher numbers logged for Windows 11 in October were partially down to users who were trying out Windows 11, but then decided they did not like what they saw and went back to Windows 10. Or it might be something to do with hardware pre-installed with Windows 10. You can still buy a lot of computers that are pre-installed with Windows 10. Apparently, a lot of people are doing so. Much of this may be due to enterprises I misspelled do, which simply aren't ready to move to Windows 11. Some of this has to do with people who just don't like change. Some of it has to do with people who just don't want to spend money to upgrade to new hardware right now. I believe that. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever the reason, Microsoft's only choice to get people to move to Windows 11 is through strong-arm tactics. No more updates, pay for updates, or buy a new computer. This isn't making it any friends. Right now, we've got about 10 months to go before Windows 10 is done. We'll see how things look as we get closer to October. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 10 still rules? And your choices are, and there are a lot of them this week, I love Windows 10. I love Windows 11. I moved to 11 and hated it, moved right back. I'm tolerating 11, we'll see. I know I'll have to move eventually. You'll pry 10 for my cold, dead computer. Who can afford a Windows 11 PC? And you Windows people are funny. More popcorn! So far we've got 30 votes, and not shockingly, you Windows people are funny. More popcorn has over half the votes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tolerating 11. We'll see, and you'll pry 10 for my cold, dead computer are tied for second place. Or maybe they're tied for third place. I never really understood how that worked. Anyway, when you vote in the poll, you can do that by going to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And then you can give us a call and tell us what you think of Windows 11. But keep it clean. We're on the radio. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
I think they're still going to have the same problem, Nick, that they did with Windows 7. Windows 7 being so rock solid that nobody wanted to give that up. And there's still, matter of fact, some places that I know still are running Windows 7. But yep. Windows 10, again, that's the same thing. You know, it's rock solid. There's no problems with it. You know, here and there, like any other software package, just needs maintenance once in a while. But it's not buggy. And no, for what?
That's the contradiction, is that every month, Microsoft releases their monthly updates, and they fix about 100 problems between all their services.
But
those updates are going to end this coming October.
Yeah.
And so unless you pay extra for it.
I still think they're going to be pressured to extend that longer. Hear me now, remember me later.
The pressure goes the other way. Their investors, the people who are buying their stock, are saying, you're not giving us enough money.
Mm. Oh, yeah. We've always said that it's about the stockholders.
And the way they're going to do that is by forcing you to go to Windows 11. They don't make money off of Windows 10, and they spend a lot of effort and a lot of time and a lot of people keeping it running.
And there was
So what they're going to do is say, no more 10, got to go to 11. Don't own 11, buy it.
And there was a new Microsoft blog out recently that they're going to start requiring TPM 2.0 in Microsoft 11, even though TPM 1.2 is just fine, which means if you have a computer that's more than 2 or 3 years old, even if it is compatible with Windows 11 now, it won't be in the future when they start requiring Windows 10 11 and the TPM 2.0 on Windows 11. And the blog entry had a line about, you know, enterprise customers may need to make some changes. Yeah, like throw away every single PC they currently have and buy thousands and thousands of new PCs.
And companies don't have the budget for that. And I'm sorry, Windows 11 doesn't offer anything spectacular, the latest hot thing that I've got to, quick rush and get to. They move some things around. Oh, instead of the button being on the left, which you can put back there, they put it in the middle.
And the big crime's not quite the right word. Microsoft will let you pay them per seat. What is it? $30 per seat.
Mm-hmm. First year.
Per computer to continue Windows 10 updates past October.
Again, it's about the money.
Right. And so if you have a company with a lot of PCs, that can be a whole lot of money. But they are making you pay for bugs in their system that they should be fixing for free. Have fixed for free for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And that's the problem. They have a huge PR problem. Right? Because on the one hand, what we talked about already, their investors are pressuring them to make more money.
Yep.
on the other hand, the only way they make more money is to say to you, we screwed up, you pay for it.
Yeah. Well, like we've said, too, everybody out there using Windows is a beta tester.
Yep.
Because that's what they do. They roll out these changes and everything else and pray for the best and, you know, figure, ah, all right, we'll have a little fallout, but we can live with that.
Right. And that's it. It's all an equation.
Yep.
You know, who benefits, who loses, how much, you know, what kind of collateral damage can we accept?
Yeah, and withstand.
Right. So. But, you know, the reality is that in the long run, businesses have two choices. They can either bow down or move off Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they move off Windows, they have two choices. They can throw away all their computers and buy Macs. If they do that, why don't they just throw away all their computers and buy new PCs?
Right.
Or they can keep all their old computers and use Linux.
Which they can make it look like.
And then have to retrain every single person in their company.
Not really. I mean, for the most part, well, you know, if you've got applications on a Linux, you can make the Linux box look like a Windows system. Right.
But LibreOffice is not going to look exactly like Microsoft Office.
No, that's not. But those things are minor that they can get over.
That's a showstopper for so many people.
For many people.
The buttons look different. I can't use it. It's too different.
Ugh.
And it does things just a little bit differently. I bought my wife a new laptop, and it did not come with Office. So I said, I'll buy you Office, but it's going to take a while to show up because Microsoft. So I said, let me put LibreOffice on. At least you can get work done.
Mm-hmm.
She could use Writer just fine. But Impress, which is PowerPoint,
mm-hmm.
which is where she spends 90% of her day,
mm-hmm.
worked just that much differently. And she could not stand it.
No.
Could not stand it.
Yeah, it happens.
So when we finally got her Windows, her Office installed, it was a miracle. She was happy again. But it's that precise. Does LibreOffice Impress do everything PowerPoint does? Yes, and more.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the point.
It's learning.
It doesn't do it exactly the same way.
Yep.
I had a customer complain once. Their computer quit working. So I get there. The Microsoft Word icon moved like 3 inches to the left.
Yep.
And that meant the computer didn't work because she couldn't open her Microsoft Word anymore.
Oh, boy.
No, that's what people think. They get used to a look.
Yeah.
That's the other problem with buying them a new computer.
It's going to look different.
It doesn't look like the old computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it still drives the same.
Well, that's not the point for them.
Yeah, I know.
For a lot of people, they can't get used to the radio being in a new spot.
What do you mean it has 6 buttons? My old one only had 5. I can't do it anymore.
Yes, sir.
but yet, if they go to Windows 11, things are going to change again.
And so we're forcing change on people. They don't like Microsoft is forcing change on people. They don't like change.
And in 10 years, we're going to be doing the same thing with Windows 12.
And the same thing with Windows 13.
Yeah.
So, I completely agree. The reality is that in terms of what's going to happen next, there's no good solution for most people.
Yep.
They either have to spend money. Whether they have to spend money, that's done. That's a done deal.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they do it sooner or later, they have to spend money.
Yep.
In the meantime, how much change are they forcing on their people?
Yeah, true.
And that's the issue. And Microsoft doesn't have an easy out here, so they're doing what Apple did. They're ripping the Band-Aid off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least 3 times in the past, Apple has said, everything you know is wrong. Start all over. We're not using M80 Motorola processors anymore.
It's better than M.
We're going to Intel. Shut up. Throw away your old machines. Buy new ones.
Yep.
And people did.
All right. I think we got a caller on the line. Apple.
Yeah, we got a few.
Okay.
Tell you what, Nick, let's move on to the phones. Right now we've got Bill from Greece on the line. Go ahead, Bill.
Happy New Year, gentlemen.
Same to you.
I'm a Linux diver, and I have one problem I've not been able to solve. On some Linux distributions, when I move my mouse into the app, the mouse gets the size of a pencil point. I've done searches. I've tried searches. I can't figure out. What I end up doing is going to a different Linux. Is there a way to reset the mouse or something so that when you move it into an application, it doesn't shrink down?
Probably not. this is an issue that is entirely based in the fact that the apps control the mouse size. So you have to look in the app itself to see if there is an option to change the size of the mouse. When you are out on the desktop, Linux controls the size of the cursor.
But
and you can change the cursor. You can make it different colors, different shapes. Right. You can make it, depending on the distro, you can make it animated. You can do all kinds of things with it. It's amazing.
Right, but if I go to a different distribution and I use the same app, I can move the mouse into that app and it stays large.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. In most distributions, not all, but in most distributions, the size and shape of the cursor are controlled by the app, but not in all of them. For example, I use Xubuntu, and I can't think of an app that changed my cursor.
So you may want to look in the app settings to see if there's a cursor option. Are you using the high DPI settings? Do you have a
no?
Okay, so that's what I was thinking. I see that sometimes on the Mac. So I got a 5K monitor, but I'm only running it at 1K. So every
I've got a 1220 monitor.
Yeah. So sometimes it shrinks things so small because it's going to the native resolution.
And I've heard it's a GTK problem, and you need to go into, it's almost like you got to go into code and reset code or get into the DCOMF editor and hope that'll do it.
Right. And like I said, in some distros, the distribution itself controls the mouse. In some, it gives that control to the app. And like I said, I use Xubuntu, and I can't think of an app. If it doesn't bother me. I guess I haven't noticed it, that changes the cursor shape. But I have used KDE, and I have seen that in apps it does change it.
I posted a link to a help file I found for Arch Linux, and it talks about a bunch of different Linux distros and front ends and gives some examples on how to set cursor sizes. But like Nick said, I don't think you want to set the cursor size for Linux. You need to set it in that specific app.
Yeah, and I don't see the way to do it. Okay. I'm pretty good at looking stuff up, and I haven't been able to find it. What I end up doing is I just put in a different distro. Since 1996, I'm up to 437 distros.
Nice.
Ooh, nicely done.
Yeah, well, I've got a special computer with 6 hard drives on it and a switch. And I can switch
very
to any
nice
hard drive. Oh, well, thank
very
you.
Very nice.
Happy New Year. You guys do the greatest job ever. Thank you.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you. And to everybody out there, whatever you celebrated over the last few weeks, there were about, on average, I think about 6,000 different holidays celebrated. over the last few weeks and up into the next few weeks.
And Lunar New Year's.
Whichever ones you celebrate, congratulations.
Yeah, Lunar New Year is early this this year. It's I think it's the January 29th. And I looked up Mongolian New Year. That's on February 1st.
Okay, hold on.
Right, right. Will there be a show?
Maybe.
For those of you who don't know, we're talking about the WHO. Not the old WHO, W-H-O. The new WHO, H-U. They're right. a group that combines hard rock with Mongolian throat singing. And it works.
Okay. All right. We got a full bank here. So let's go to our next caller, which is Will from Hampton, Virginia. Go ahead, Will.
Hello, panel. Happy New Year.
Say
you,
to you
too.
Yeah. Bill didn't mention whether or not he had tried accessibility, and he didn't mention what distro he was using.
That's an option, well, yeah. Sometimes accessibility settings override other things.
Right, right, right.
That's a great thought.
Yeah. But anyway, I got two observations, both of them from YouTube. I'm sure that if you guys didn't actually watch it, you heard about it. Jensen Huang at the World Government Summit back not quite a year ago, February 2024, he was quoted, and this is a direct quote, it is our job to create computing technology such that nobody, that's what he said, nobody has to program. Stop.
Hmm.
There's always going to be people that like programming.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always going to be people that like programming. We're seeing a lot of tools now.
Yeah.
ChatGPT has got a lot of really good programming assistant tools.
Mm-hmm.
You're stuck on a procedure, you can ask ChatGPT how to do it. But yeah, so that was, computers started where you had to program it. You got a blinking cursor and you had to type your own programs.
Yeah.
And
some
like started to prepackaged programs, and now everyone's using them.
Well, and some people just like the challenge of setting up the software to do it the way they want it. I mean, the software might work fine, but if they can go in there and tinker with it and add this extra feature or this, have it do this also, I mean, it's a win-win.
Right, but what, okay, so one of the things that they're talking about, of course, is AI.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. You want to be able to tell your computer, do this.
And it does.
You can almost do that now. So I can go into ChatGPT or any one of them and say, write me a Python program that does X. I may have to spend a lot of time describing that program.
Yes.
Gemini actually is very good at this. But if I describe it properly, it will write the program for me.
Well, since when has a customer ever described the program properly
that
you're trying to write?
Exactly.
and that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, and Jensen Huang probably knows this. Even Devin AI ain't perfect.
Yeah, and he's the CEO of NVIDIA, so that he knows a thing or two about programming.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And then there's things like NoSQL, which is no programming databases. Right, you don't have to learn programming to create databases. So there's a big movement, and has been for a while, to make programming less necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's never going to be not necessary.
Yep.
You know Jensen Huang was talking about was the average user.
Yeah, yeah. I understand. I did understand that from his remarks that much.
Right. Right. It's not the people who program Windows or Linux or anything else. They're still going to be programming. And you're still going to need back end people in your business.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But for the average user who sits down at their computer and says, you know, I wish I had a program that did X, they should be able to, assuming it's not terribly complex, describe it to an AI and have them write the code.
And then attach it to a robot. So you can, you know, house, brew my coffee and make my breakfast. And then it will ask what breakfast you want today, and then it does it.
Right.
Actually,
right.
Some of the sci-fi books I've been reading, they have 3D printed food. And so you put in the base protein, and you say eggs, and out come eggs. And you say toast, and out comes toast.
Okay, you think that's sci-fi, but there are 3D printers that print, wait for it, chocolate. And people are using them to make, like, placemats, placeholders for parties. All right. It sounds like we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ramey, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites. Members for the Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, clock's in a different place on this computer, we are Soundbites.
And we still have Will on the line, I believe.
Will, are you there?
Will? He might have been done.
I think we were done with Will.
Okay. I'll switch to another caller. You go ahead and talk, Nick.
This is the most riveting radio on the planet. Again, we're doing this a little differently because I'm home. I'm a little lamed up. My right knee, I racked it up pretty good. Can't walk on it. Steve stepped right up, figured out how to make this happen so we could do a remote. Dave's still on the buttons, not fast asleep yet. So we're all good, and we're just waiting to move to the next caller.
Buttons,
but
push.
Yeah, I think Steve and I keep getting bugged by this computer. Okay, this is my home computer, and so it tells me that there's a text message coming in. It tells me there's a new email coming in, and then it's
you need,
it's
do not
distractions.
Do not disturb mode.
What?
Do not disturb mode.
Yeah, I should probably do that. That would.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. We got Fred from Rochester. Go ahead, Fred.
Hey guys, happy winter.
You too.
Happy New Year with Rochester weather. Couple things. One thing. Right off the bat, when I'm listening to you either by, tune in, or on the YouTube, the volume is really good. And when I'm coming through on this call now, it's really, really, really quiet.
Are you talking about your phone?
On my phone. I haven't touched a thing. I called in, and when it switched over, when Dave switched it over to please hold, and I was listening to you, and then when he put the call through, and I'm listening to you, I really, really have to strain to hear you.
Is there a...
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
What I say is there? There's a separate button over there for the phone call, right? And the phone output, probably.
It's up.
It's up. We don't want to go too high, because then it overmodulates other things.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just if there was something simple to fix, I could just...
Do you have a volume control on your phone?
Yeah, it's all the way up.
Yeah.
But like I said, the YouTube was almost too loud, but okay.
Yeah, but you got to understand, Fred, one thing that we're dealing with is this station was not set up to do talk radio.
It's not a complaint. It's just a was something you could do.
Right.
So what I want to know, I guess, is I bought three machines from Woot that were refurbished, and 11 was installed, Windows 11.
Uh-huh.
And I immediately deleted them to put my Linux Ubuntu 24.04.
Right.
Does that count as a Windows? Are Windows people counting that as a Windows machine?
No, in there. That's now a Linux machine. Well, you bought a Windows machine, and you converted it to a Linux machine.
So it probably counts as a Windows sale, but not as a concurrent use.
Yeah, because like I say, I bought them. They were refurbished on Woot at a really good price, and they didn't have one that didn't have Windows on it. So I said, well, I could fix that. I just get rid of it.
Yep. I can't tell you the number of times I've done that. And they are registered. As far as Microsoft is concerned, it's a Windows sale.
So
they probably count it as such because it was a Windows machine when you bought it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking, and I was wondering. Okay. So their numbers are a little skewed because a whole bunch of us are just dumping it as soon as we get it.
And there's another number called active installed base, which is how many people are actually using Windows.
Oh, okay.
And so one side is from the sales department, the other side is from the service department, maybe.
And that active installed base has to do with when you log in with a Windows ID.
Or when other Windows telemetry reports back to Microsoft in your system.
Right.
Okay.
So right now, you, for example, and the theory is they don't know it's you, Fred, from Rochester, New York. They just know a person.
Right.
A person bought a Windows machine, and it's never been used as a Windows machine.
Right. I was going to say, you can believe that if you want to, but I don't believe them at all. So.
All right, but that's not the point. The point, I can't speak to that. What I can speak to is you're in the system as a Windows sale, but not as an active Windows user.
The people that are the shareholders for Windows are listening.
Well, I wonder if used computers count from Woot, because it's the same license that was sold the first time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, it's got to be a brand new license.
Even though it's the same computer.
Yeah. They upgraded it when they refurbished it.
So then it would be new license. Yeah.
It's an older machine.
Well, didn't somebody try to stop the sale of used books? Wasn't one of the big publishers, they don't want you to buy a used book because that means you didn't pay them full price for a new book?
That's right.
So the same publishers that don't like libraries because that means that people didn't buy their book?
But with Windows, it's different because they don't care what the computer cost. They still get the licensing fee for the copy of Windows. You could buy a computer for $1. You're still going to pay $350 for that Windows license.
Right. Yeah, not me, but okay.
Yeah.
Right, but that's my point. You did, Fred. You bought three computers with Windows 11 on them. You paid for Windows 11 three times.
It's embedded.
But you did.
It's embedded in the price of the computer.
Sir, go ahead.
Yeah, it's embedded in the price of the computer. You don't. That's how most people are getting the new versions of the operating system. It's part of the price of the computer. There are the hobbyists that like upgrading themselves. So most people just wait till they get a new computer.
Right. So, but the other thing is, as far as the shareholders are concerned, you did good. You bought three copies of Windows.
They're loving you.
That's all they care about.
Yeah, they love you.
Even if I didn't pay $300 for the machine?
You did when you bought the machine.
No, you paid whatever you paid. A part of that price went to Microsoft. I just picked $350 because cost 100 years ago. It's probably a lot less now. The point is, you paid for a copy of Windows. Don't think you got a free copy of Windows. Mm-mm. Doesn't happen that way.
No.
Wasn't there a thing years ago where a bunch of Linux users went up to Microsoft's offices and wanted the money back because they bought Linux on their computer? It didn't come with Windows? Because PC companies have to pay a Windows license for every computer sold, even if it doesn't have Windows on it.
Right. Even if you buy, if you go to Dell, one of your choices of operating system is Ubuntu. That's great. You get a computer with Ubuntu on it. You still pay a Microsoft licensing fee for that computer.
They probably started fighting that. The manufacturers started fighting that back about the time this protest came out.
Yeah, that doesn't mean they won.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is, Microsoft has people over a barrel. So you go to Lenovo, for example, and say, You know, we want to put Windows on every machine. And Lenovo says, well, we don't want it on every machine because we sell some Linux machines. And Microsoft will say, if you want the low price, it goes on every machine. Whether you put Linux, whether you put Windows on that machine or not, you pay the licensing fee for that machine if you want the low price for all the other machines.
That makes sense.
In my family, back in the 40s, that was mob tactics. Nowadays, it's just business.
Yep.
Yeah. It's just like the interest rates used to be considered usury over 25%.
Right.
So we answer your question because we got to keep moving on.
Yeah, we got other people waiting. Yeah. You good, Fred?
To the gentleman that called, I have Ubuntu 2404. I don't have any problems with the cursor in any of the apps. Of course, I don't have a whole bunch of them, but I was curious as to what one he had if he calls back.
Yeah.
So, I'll be listening.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Love you guys.
Love you too. Have fun. All right.
Your name, please?
Oh, right, Bill. That was it. Okay.
Where are you coming from?
All righty. The fact is Microsoft makes their money no matter what happens. It's the dream. You know, if your entire company buys brand new computers with Linux and puts Linux on them, and says, from the company, we want all our machines to have Linux on them, you still pay the Microsoft fee.
Yep. All right, let's get back to...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we got a bunch of... They're packing right in here. So we got Mark from Rochester on the line. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, first of all, Happy New Year.
Same to you.
The second part is, I understand that... there's a big change coming up for Firefox, and they would like just about everybody to change over to a new version of Firefox on the 14th, by the 14th. Have you heard anything about that?
No.
I have not.
Other than there's new updates coming to Firefox pretty much every couple weeks.
Yeah.
Well, that's a notification that's coming through, so do you think it's legit or not?
Well, I'm...
Depends on where the notification is coming
from. I'm not seeing anything on Mozilla's support site about it.
It could just
I mean,
be
they that, certainly want you to go to the latest release.
Yeah, your release might be old and there's an update coming.
Okay.
But I don't see anything... Did you get some sort of email or what? How did you find out about this?
It was just a pop-up that came up when I fired it up. And it said there is a certain issues are going to probably happen after the 14th. So what I've done, I went to Mozilla and I downloaded the latest version, which I believe is 133.03.
Oh, here it is. They're updating the root certificates. Because some of the root certificates have expired.
Okay. So what does that do for me? What
makes it a little better to run and operate?
And it would be part of the normal update process anyway.
Yeah.
What it may happen is that if you go to a very, very old website that hasn't upgraded their security certificate, mm-hmm. you may start getting warnings that their certificate is old.
Well, and the other way around as well, right?
Yeah.
If Firefox hasn't updated their certificates, and you go to someone who's using a newer certificate, you'll also get an error message.
Yeah. And the Firefox's own root certificate is expiring on March 14th of 2025.
Right. I see. Well, I downloaded a new version of it, that new version, and I've got it as a tarball. And where should I put it in order to open it up?
Well, in terms of opening up the tarball anywhere.
Okay.
The real question is, where did you download it from?
I downloaded it from their website.
Okay.
And it's
I'm assuming you're on Linux because you're downloading a tarball.
Yes.
All right, so I'm trying to download it right now.
There's been
I got a tarball. Okay, so yes, that's legit.
Okay.
And hold on. Let me open up that tarball.
You'd normally install it like you normally install program, wouldn't you?
Well, it may be that you have to open the tarball in order to get the installer. And there's a Firefox.
And for everyone else, the tarball is like a compressed file, like a zip file.
Yeah. It uses tar instead of zip, and so they call it a tarball because they do.
That's what they named it.
Why not? Yeah, it looks like if you hi, how are you? It looks like if you unpack the tarball, you get an updater file and a couple of other things. Themselves, but yeah.
Okay.
That's what it looks like. So, it's more likely. What version of Linux are you running?
Mint. I think it's 20.3 or something like that. Sticks in my mind.
Okay. It is quite likely that at kind of any day now, Mint will update Firefox to the latest version.
And this is true of Mac, Windows, Linux, and Android. All versions of Firefox on all platforms.
Okay.
Right. So, yeah, I would wait a couple of weeks before I did anything. Since you've got a bit of time, wait and see if there is an actual update that you can just click on the link and go.
Okay, so then...
In your standard update process, I'm not saying outside of that, but, you know, when you do an update to your operating system, you can also update all the apps in that operating system, and one of them would be Firefox.
Okay. Now, the other thing is, can I just plain do, in a month or so, go to apt-get and get it and have it install it from the repository?
Well, theoretically, that will happen automatically for the next update.
Okay.
You don't have to do it manually.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so my suggestion is generally, particularly with Linux distributions, wait for the distro update.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because when you install it through the distribution update process, that program has been vetted specifically for that distribution, and any necessary changes to make it run better have been performed.
I see.
Whereas if you download it directly from Firefox, you're getting the raw version, which I'm sure is fine, but is not tweaked or fine-tuned for that version of Linux.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yes.
If I downloaded a regular tarball, it's a BZ2 compression.
Sure.
Switch do I use for making it and for decrypting it?
Okay.
You should be able to just double click on it in almost any distribution, and that would open it up and decrypt it as well. I mean, that would just open it up to make it normal. You'd be able to see the folders and the files that are inside it.
Okay. All right, that's good advice. Now,
yeah, but again, I'd wait for the distro update, which I'm sure is coming.
I think that would be a pretty good solution. But I'm also curious that if you were to open this thing up, you use .config or configuration, make, and make install. Where do you wind up having to be root?
You want to be root right from the very beginning.
Oh.
That's safest.
Okay, that's all taken care of when I go to open it.
No, it'll open up, and then you can save it to your desktop or a folder or wherever you want to put it.
Okay.
And then you go to a command line.
Yes.
And sudo all that stuff so that you do it as root.
And it looks like this root update, root certificate update, came out in version 128. And we're already on 133 or something now, so...
Okay.
Probably already installed.
It might already be installed.
Yeah.
Right. So, Mark, honestly, my suggestion is do it through the update, the standard distribution update process.
That makes good sense. No, I appreciate that.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark.
Take care. Bye.
Yep. Well, that was nerdy.
The fact that he got that update notice makes me think he wasn't running the latest updates. Yeah. But
Firefox, and that's the other thing. Linux is just like every other operating system. Keep it up to date.
But you have to restart the program every now and then. So if Chrome and Firefox update themselves automatically when you quit and relaunch, if you never quit, it never gets a chance to update. And you may not notice that little message up in the corner that says relaunch to update.
Right. Yes, and that's very true. Right, so we're not advocating that you have to reboot your machine, but every once in a while you should close an app or two.
Yeah. All right, let's see if we can slip this one in before we go to break. We got a few minutes. We got Jim from Irondequoit. Go ahead, Jim.
Hello. I had an old laptop that worked perfectly good, and I put Windows 11 in it, and now it doesn't work at all. And the other thing is, do I have to pay a license for all these computers that I don't use that have Windows on them that are around the house?
If you don't use them, you don't have to update them, which means you don't have to pay any license fees.
Any new license. You already paid the license fee when you bought the computer.
Right.
Okay. What is there any way to fix that one that's the old computer that doesn't no longer works with Windows 11?
Well, it depends on what the reason is, but it's likely to be a hardware issue.
Yeah,
not enough RAM
it?
Or not a fast enough processor or no TPM 2.0.
Or you have to update one of the drivers for one of your hardware devices first.
How old is this machine?
Probably 7 or 8 years old or more.
You got to go back probably most likely to Windows 10.
Is it a name brand or is it a custom build?
No, it's a HP.
Okay. Go to HP's website for that model, and they have Windows 11 upgrade instructions, and you download the updates, the driver updates needed before you install Windows 11.
Okay.
So you may need to either...
from another computer.
Go back to a restore point if you can. No, you can't go back old versions not from a restore point, can you?
Yeah.
No, not really.
Maybe.
You can downgrade, but you can only do that once or twice, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So I should go to HP and then website and then...
Yep. Yeah. Get your service tag off the back of the computer and put that into HP's support page. And it will have instructions on how to update to Windows 11 and what it needs to do beforehand. Or it will tell you that it can't upgrade to Windows 11.
Yeah.
Which may be...
On HP's website, they'll list the models that can't go to Windows 11 due to the chips on the board.
And if you use your service tag from the computer, it will take you right to your specific model.
And tell you.
Okay. It's either the service tag or the serial number.
Okay. One quick question. Is there any way to change the color balance of my laptop?
Depends on the operating system, yes. It depends on the operating system and whether or not there's a program available to do that. I don't.
Yeah.
Honestly, I've never tried it on 11.
Yeah, there should be like a color system preference to adjust colors.
I look there, but I can't find anything that does it.
On on my Mac, there's something called the preset color space, and you can pick different color spaces. So maybe it must probably name something different.
There is in the control panel something called color management.
Okay.
All right.
Music.
That music tells us that the entire first hour of this show is done. And it wasn't nearly as painful as we thought it was going to be. But do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you. And it's not just a whole nother hour, it's a whole nother year. So we're starting off all right here. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We're going to take a quick bio break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. So don't go too far. It's a whole lot more sound bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Who we got on the line, Dave?
All right, we got Gary from Rochester. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yep.
Okay, I had, not last week, but the week before, you talked a lot about internet security and scams. Pardon me, and I just wanted to remind people that they can get their free credit report from each of the three agencies once a year, and many people space it out and get a credit report every 3 months from a different one, but they are entitled to that, and the reason this got set off for me is that I found out that my Social Security number was hacked and out there, and so I got the credit reports and put what's called a security freeze on it. So if anyone applies for credit in my name, the credit agencies are obliged to text me or call me to make sure that I'm the one doing it. I know it's not exactly related to what you were talking about, but it is related, and
it's fine. But Gary, you're wrong about one thing. You can get a free credit report every week.
Oh, really?
They've updated it. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. They've changed that now. And in fact, if you go to soundbites.org, one of the important links is frauds and scams.
Oh, good.
And if you click on that, one of the things is free credit reports. It's at annualcreditreport.com. That one is the real deal. Yeah. Don't be fooled by other ones. Mm-hmm. That's the real deal.
Right. That's the one I thought I was going to, but it could be that there are so many lookalikes, you have to be so careful.
Well, each of the agencies has their own, too, mm-hmm. but the annual credit report will point you to each a separate company as well.
Yes, it did, and that's how I did it.
Yep, and putting a freeze on your credit is one of the best things you can do to help prevent fraud. If you're in a position where you don't need to get new credit, new car, new house, new credit card, but the other thing is a lot of the apps for your credit cards make it easy to freeze and unfreeze. That was the other big thing that the FTC did. You have to be able to freeze and unfreeze your credit for free. So you can unfreeze it if you're, you know, buying a car and then freeze it again after after you're done.
Right, right. But I was familiar with that. But thanks for the update, and I think that's very helpful to your other listeners, too.
It is, Gary. Thank you very much.
The other thing I wanted to remind people of is I know you're not having a fund drive right now, but it goes forever. And people over 73 who have IRAs can get, they have a required minimum distribution, but they can get a qualified charitable distribution. And 90.1 does qualify. You are a 501c3 outfit, and they can save on their taxes. They can take that if they have to take money out of their IRAs because they're over 73. They can have it sent directly to you, and not have to pay taxes on pulling the money out of their IRAs.
That's exactly right, Gary. Thank you very much for pointing that out. For everybody listening who has an IRA and is getting up there in years, talk to your financial advisors about a regular gift to Jazz 90.1.
Okay, well,
thanks, Gary.
No problem.
Gary? Yes, Gary's gone.
Gary's gone. We're getting the next one in line.
All
right.
Yeah.
We got Will back on the line, Nick.
Will from Hampton?
Yep.
What's up, Will?
If Bill is still listening, I use Zorin, and I went through the accessibility to change my mouse size.
Good, you found it.
Yep.
There's a lot of weird things in accessibility that sometimes you don't see.
Yeah. So the other observation that I wanted to make came from a guy, and I'm sure you guys know about him. A YouTube channel, DistroTube. He thinks, and I quote, let me bring it up here real quick. What he says is that he thinks, so I think Linux is just going to keep gaining market share. I could see us possibly getting all the way to 10% mark by the end of 2025. I tend to agree with him. I think it's possible, especially in the wake of what's going to happen on October 14th.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, it's very possible. The big thing, you know, every year is the year of the Linux desktop. The reality is we already got Linux desktops.
Mm-hmm.
Macs are basically a Unix variant like Linux is. Chromebooks are a Linux variant. And then there are people who are using Linux itself. I would very much like to see more people use Linux. It is free, as in both in every way. So you can do what you want, when you want, where you want, without anybody else saying anything about it. I love that.
Yep.
So, yeah, we all hope Linux gains market share.
Yeah, Android and iPhone, both based on the Linux kernel.
And the thing of it is,
in the server market, Linux is like 70% of the server market. Yeah. Most of the servers and web servers and file servers are all running Linux.
In fact, yep, if you look at it one way, it's Linux. Linux is most of it, and Windows is the rest.
Yep. And the thing with Linux, too, though, is it offers so many different options, or I should say different flavors, that you can try. Right. You can have it look like a PC. You can have it look like a Mac. You can have it just look like Linux. There's different ways that you can set it up that people, for the most part, really don't, you know, need to learn a heck of a lot. And it updates automatically. That, I mean, and to be so bug-free. That's the biggest thing for me. You know, I mean, not having the hassles of, oh, I got to deal with this update or that update, and is it going to brick my machine, or what is it going to do?
Right. I think, yes, absolutely. Will, thank you. That's very, very good. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, fellas.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, if you've got an older machine, take a look at Linux. You'll find it isn't as scary as you think it is these days. And, you know, you get some life out of an old machine without having to pay Microsoft. Nothing wrong with that. We got anybody else on the line?
Yep, Dave is getting it up now.
Okie doke.
All right, now we've got Patrick from Batavia. Go ahead, Patrick.
How you doing, guys?
Just peachy.
Great, how are you?
Great. Happy New Year. I've got an issue here with a Zoom invitation that I received through my email. The link for Zoom shows up, but the OneTap Mobile doesn't show up as a link. Is there a setting that I have to activate in my phone to make that work?
They may not have turned it on at the other end.
Yeah.
And if you try to tap the link that you did get, does it open in the web browser or in the Zoom app?
It doesn't. Oh, wait. I was trying to bring it up so I could talk to you about it because I was on hold here. I was fooling around with it. But... so, I guess my question is there a setting in either an Android? I have a Pixel, and my wife has a Apple iPhone. Is there a setting in our phone that we have to change in order for it to show up as a link? I was reading or watching videos, and it says go to the invitation, and there'll be some things that are in black and some things are in red, and ones are in red you can click a link on.
So let me ask you this. When you get other invitations, do they work?
Well, here's the thing. You're not going to like the answer because it does. I know what you're saying, but it doesn't really pertain because I've never done it before. My wife wants to use it. I just use the click the link to go on Zoom. She wanted to use the OneTap Mobile so she could use her phone. But I will tell you this. Other people that are in the group use it. Now, she's not been able to figure out who to ask about it because, you know, if somebody helped you do something a year ago, you probably forgot how they did it. Or maybe you didn't even do it. Maybe somebody did it for you.
Normally, all links in the email will show up as a link. You don't have to do anything extra. There is no setting. It does it as a link by itself.
Okay.
If it doesn't have the OneTap Mobile, that means the other end it didn't send it.
But somehow other people are doing it. You know, that's the thing that's weird. So okay, I won't push the issue. If you said you're not aware of any setting that you can do on your phone, I'll just accept that.
If you just tap that same link, it should open in the Zoom app on your phone.
Okay.
If not, you should be able to copy and paste it into a browser.
Yeah. Okay.
What I'm wondering is if it was a malformed URL, and so the phone doesn't recognize it as a URL.
Okay. I'll look into that.
Maybe there's that one message, but the next one will be right.
I've got one other. I know you've got busy, but I got one other. Hope it is a quick question. I have an old smart TV that the picture went out. I can't see anything, but it still operates. I want to junk it, but does the TV store all of my logins for the different apps, that like Netflix and Paramount and that, so that if it would be somebody else got the TV, they could access those apps? Or is there a way of deleting that stuff?
What brand of TV?
I think it's a Vizio. It's a Fire TV. Fire TV.
That's a good question because it never asks me for my account credentials again.
Yeah.
Right. So, but it's always plugged into power. I bet it's
it's
CMOS.
Tied to the actual the app. When you activate that app, it's stored up on that particular website for that app.
Well, yeah. Fire TV stores the network passwords on Amazon, but the app passwords? That's a very good question.
Mm-hmm. And the problem is, since the picture has gone out, even if there was a place you could go and restore factory settings, I can't because there's no picture there. And while you're thinking about mm-hmm. that, the funny thing is how I discovered this. My wife was watching TV one day, and you might remember she's blind, so she hears the sound and everything. I glanced over. I was at my computer in the other room, and I said, there's no picture on the TV. She said, well, sounds fine to me.
There you go.
So I said, well, I don't like it. So I went on button TV. But it got me wondering, should I somehow take out some parts, or can somebody just use it, or am I just worried too much?
My first thought would be, after you unplug it for a while, it would lose the settings that are stored in NVRAM.
Okay.
But, yeah, to be safe, you should shred it.
Yeah. So I'd have to open up the TV and take out the control box there.
Or just shred the whole TV.
Yeah.
Have you seen that YouTube channel, Will It Shred?
Yeah.
They throw cars in there.
where do you shred a 50-inch TV?
Well, I think you can take them to recycling centers, especially if you accidentally happen to drop it and it cracks. I mean, nobody's going to want it then. You know, anybody sees it, that it's shattered.
Most of the reputable recycling companies are pretty good about removing customer data. Somebody like e-waste or what's the other King something?
Sun King.
Sun King.
There's a local place here where they'll take electronic equipment, so I'll just take it over to them.
Yep.
Okay, guys, I'll let you go so you can get on your next call. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
That's something we don't think about. I remember seeing a police show where they bought a bunch of used photocopiers, and people don't realize that a lot of photocopiers have hard drives in them that store the scans before they print, and some of them weren't deleted. And I always remember it because it was a Buffalo Police Department.
Same with printers. Many printers have hard drives, or not hard drives anymore, but memory sticks.
Because it can accept the data faster than the mechanics can physically print it, so it has to keep it somewhere.
Right. And depending on how big the memory is, it could hold on to it for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to the phones. We got Rick from Irondequoit. Go ahead, Rick.
Hello, guys. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
You too.
Quick question on Linux. I've been playing around with it myself and a little bit, and I kind of like it. The only dilemma I have is I have one program, and I don't know if Dave might have something to do with this, but I have one program that's called Unification, and it's a pager company for being able to receive public safety transmissions, firehouse, police, you know, yada, yada. And you use this program, which is, I believe, Windows-based, of course, but they don't have a download for Linux, if you will, to use it in that. Is there a way around being able to use it, even though it's not a Linux?
Yeah, and why? Wine, you can install Wine and then run Windows-based programs in Wine.
And if you don't want to go to the hassle of figuring out how to install Wine yourself, there's a commercial program called Crossover that comes with pre-built installers.
Yeah.
And I'll pop that link to the top of our link list too.
Okay, I'll look at that. That's the only thing that's stopping me at this point. I've been trying different stuff and making sure that programs I'm using or mm-hmm. things like that are compatible so that I could...
Now, you did a search, though? You've done a search, in the library for anything? As far as police, you know, scanning and all that other type of stuff?
Well, I think this program is specific to this model or type of radio, if you will. Similar to
Motorola.
Or like Motorola. A police scanner type of thing, back in the Bearcat scanners?
Yes, exactly. This is a being able to do the trunking system of radio systems.
The other thing, too, though, that you can get, and it's relatively cheap and it runs on Linux, is what they call an SDR. And it's a little dongle that you can run a wire out the window, and it covers all the ham bands, police, air, air traffic, and everything else.
You might
look into something like that, because they're only like $30, $40. It's a little dongle that would go into it. You run that program, and like I say, you can select the frequencies that you want to monitor and set them up and have it scan that range.
Yeah, but I understand, and I appreciate that thought. This is specific to this radio that is portable, if you will.
Oh, okay. Like a handheld. It's a handheld.
Like a handheld, correct.
Yep.
Correct, and it's the programming to be able to put those, as you say, frequencies and tones to make it activate and all that kind of stuff. Is in this program that programs the radio itself.
Oh, okay. Yep.
You've got a good idea with that. I might even look into that for something at home.
Yeah,
Or whatever.
Yeah, there's a program in Linux called RTL-SDR, which is a set of tools for RTL-2832-based SDR receivers. So you can throw the dongle on there, and then that.
Yeah, you can select whatever frequencies you want, whether it's European radio down to air traffic controllers,
Then you have to know the frequency and codes that pager system uses.
If you know those particular frequencies, you can set it up for that.
Okay, that sounds good.
And there's a lot of YouTube videos out there right now telling you how to do it all.
Okay. One other quick question. Now, with using Linux, do I need to do anything with antivirus or anything like that? You guys have probably talked about this, and it's passing me by a little.
Okay. So, in general, there are very few Linux viruses. There is a program called ClamAV. ClamAV, which you can run on every version of Linux, and it will, you can set it up to do stuff automatically, or, when you download a program, you can right click on it and say, check it. And that keeps up to date quite readily. And is well thought of in the industry. So if you're paranoid, and I am, so I'm running it, then no question, I would take a look at ClamAV. I'm sure it's in your distribution, so you should be able to install it immediately from there.
And you can also look at the Linux Lambada at securitytango.com.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Talks about the different security programs available for each OS.
Oh, yeah. I think I would have remembered that.
Yeah, this guy Nick wrote it.
Yeah.
Set that whole page up. You should talk to him.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for answering my questions, and you guys have a good week.
You too, sir.
You too. Yeah, Linux, you can do... the number of programs available in Linux would blow your mind. So whether or not the exact program you've been using is available... you can almost always find something equivalent. And as we said before, you may have to learn a little something new, but it'll still get the job done. So if you've got an SDR, by the way, software-defined radio.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got an SDR dongle, you can use a program like RTL-SDR to manage that and do whatever you want with it.
Yep.
There's also programs that just go right over the internet, right?
Yep.
If the frequency you want to listen to is published over the internet. You don't even need a radio to do it.
No, you can just, go right to
the program.
Yep. We got it. Well, we can at least get his questions. Let's go to Doug and Aranda Clay. At least get his questions before we have to take another break in 2 minutes. Go ahead, Doug.
Ready? I've got a question about running Excel or Word with Wine on Ubuntu. Two questions, actually. Does Wine maintain the ability to use the usual Microsoft hotkeys? Because I hate using the mouse. And I've only seen one program running under Wine, and it shrunk the menu words, the font, to the point where it was unusable. I think I know a way around that, but hotkeys, are they maintained with Wine?
Yes, those are in the program, and Wine won't change that.
What about the size of the font with Wine?
I've never seen that be a problem. What program did you have trouble with?
You know, I'm trying to remember. It's a very basic and excellent little graphics program for Windows. It did almost nothing but resize and things like that. But
do you have a high-resolution monitor?
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably why. It went to the native resolution of the monitor.
All right, that makes sense.
Which is really tiny, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a way to tweak that with Wine? Or,
It's probably in that high DPI link I posted earlier.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, so that's
now you should
page?
You should also take a look at Crossover.
Oh, really? Right? Another way to do a replacement for Wine?
Well, it's a commercial version of Wine, and it has all the installers preloaded and pre-configured for you, so it's okay. Easier to install and run. And it's a help that you can call and ask for if you need to.
Oh, no kidding. Because I own a copy of Microsoft Office. You know, I have a physical installation file, so it should work with that, theoretically.
Yep.
Amazing. All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a great day. Bye.
You too. Yeah. Crossover, as Steve said, is the commercial version of Wine. So you can do everything in Wine that you can do in Crossover, and Wine is free. But you have to do all the work.
Mm-hmm.
In Crossover, they've done the work for you.
Yeah.
So, it for many people, and it's not a terribly expensive program. I forget what it costs, but
$70-$80, I think it is.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. But is that what I'm hearing in the background? We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave. Is that what I'm hearing? There we go. wow. We'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. A whole lot more confusion and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And Dave, do we have people on the line?
No, we finally caught up. That was really a barrage of folks. I apologize to some folks that we can only handle up to 4 phone lines. So, I mean, some of the other calls that were trying to come in, which I couldn't answer, went off to somewhere in the school system to be answered. But
somebody's going to have some interesting voicemail Monday morning.
Yeah, really, make it interesting. But no, we are caught up right at the moment. I'll say moment because it's been 111 people on the stream listening, and being so cold out, I think people are just hunkering in and calling with their questions. There have been a lot of great I spoke too soon, but a lot of good questions about Linux, and I will answer the phone.
Yeah. It's interesting how things have changed over the decades. You know, when we first started with this, well, you can hear that on the archives. There are currently over 1,200 items in the archives, many of them thanks, a lot of the early ones thanks to Don Nichols. And you can hear that how things have changed over the decades and how we do a lot more phone stuff. We do a lot more Linux stuff. We do a lot more small computer stuff. We do a lot more ham radio stuff because, look, you want to see nerds? Don't look at computer people. Look at ham radio people.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And when you're both,
I resemble that.
Yeah.
Because if you saw my ham shack right
now. Right?
Yeah.
All right. Who we got on the line?
We got Craig from Fairport. Go ahead, Craig.
Happy New Year, gentlemen. Quick question. I have about an eight-year-old HP Tower PC, I guess, and I'm probably on borrowed time with this, listening to you folks every week when I get a chance. And I got one of my kids about 2 years ago, an HP, with the screen, all the guts are in the screen, the keypad and the mouse, and I'm thinking, since they don't really use it, switching my programs over to that. Basically, I just surf the internet. I have Narrow. I have a program for ripping CDs, which don't really make mixed CDs much anymore, but it's nice to have some of those items. And then I have 07 Office. Yeah, I'm an old fart. Don't really keep up with the new times.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a shop that you could recommend, maybe even off air or on air, that could transfer what I have onto this, because I'm in my 60s and I don't have the computer knowledge that you gentlemen do. So I'm happy to hire some shop that might do this, or they might even want to build me something. But they bought this HP for my kids a couple of years ago, and like I said, they really have.
Yeah, there are a number of PC shops around. Matter of fact, Steve, depending on where you live, you said Fairport, that can provide that service for you. You just have to take both boxes in,
Perfect.
And they could do the transfer.
Although, generally speaking, we can only transfer your data.
Yeah.
Applications need to be reinstalled from the original disks.
Yeah, and I did that when I bought this last tower, so I could, I can handle Narrow when they still have the licensing. And I do have the disks for the 07 Office, which I know hasn't been supported for probably 15 years.
Well, the other thing, too, though, if depending on what you're using, as far as the Office products, there's, LibreOffice and Google Docs that are free.
Okay.
And depending on how much data you have, some people just copy it all to a flash drive from their documents and desktop folder from one machine and then copy it into the new machine.
Or what you can also do is take that hard drive out of the old box, get an enclosure that it could fit into, and use it as a backup drive, but you could hook it up to the new machine and at least access the data to pull that over.
Yep. Microsoft used to include a program for doing that. Apple still does. But Microsoft stopped including that a few years ago.
Could I just plug in my old tower into this new device? There really isn't much on it. I have an external hard drive, and I have a secondary one. Per your recommendations like 10 years ago. I think you guys have been on the radio a lot longer than that. So I just have music and photo files. Again, this isn't a computer I'm using for any kind of business. It's just surfing the internet and some emails.
Mm-hmm.
I guess why bother if it's not broken, but something 7-8 years old, you gentlemen recommend?
Yeah, have something else in your back pocket. But I mean, But you said you already have a backup drive. You could just create a folder on that backup drive for all the music and photos, copy it over to that, and then copy it over to the.
Yeah, so if you have a backup drive now, plug that to the new machine and then restore.
Right, yeah. All my music files and photo are on a. I can't remember the manufacturer, but it doesn't really matter. Okay.
Yeah.
WD Elements. Yep. All right, so for some items that are... All right, so I guess I really don't even need a shop then. sounds like this is something a novice could handle.
If you've simple needs and all your data is located in one, you know, your documents folder, then it can be kind of easy. But when it gets tricky and you have to reload all your old programs, mm-hmm. some people just don't want to do that.
Right, yeah. But you sound like you've already loaded all your old programs. Or you could.
I mean, I'm looking on my desktop, and it's just some basic things.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like I said.
So if you're comfortable with reinstalling your programs, then it's just a matter of plugging in your hard drive, create a folder, drag stuff over. You know, you're going to want to bring over documents. Mm-hmm. You're going to bring over music. I don't know if you've got anything in downloads or whatever, but anywhere you've got something in a folder that you want on the new machine, just drag that folder to backup, assuming you've got enough disk space. Let it copy to the backup drive. Eject that drive safely. Plug it into the new machine and pull everything over. It's just drag and drop on both machines.
And don't forget the photos. I mean, that is the one item that I can't stress to folks enough to back up, if not two times, three times, maybe even four, because it's the photos. Those are moments in time that you cannot recreate, whereas a document, you could always recreate that.
Okay. And the really good news is if you do all of this, you've now got an automatic backup mm-hmm. on that drive, and just stick it away somewhere and you're good with a backup.
So some of my downloads and documents that are on the tower hard drive, I can kind of just take a cord and go from that to this newer device, or do I have to put them on an external hard drive?
You can copy between the network, but then you have to set up file sharing between the two computers. And
it's easier just
turn on the server on one and the client on the other.
The thing of it is terabyte drives nowadays are so cheap that you can buy them, and just, you know, they come with the adapter that you can hook up to your old tower. Copy all the stuff off. Like Nick was saying, now you got an extra backup that you can then go over and hook it up to this new machine and copy them off to there. But now you've got copies on that old, this new terabyte drive that, you know, you got in your back pocket. You can just tuck away.
Perfect. If I do run into a few problems, are you allowed on air to recommend a shop?
You can just look through the yellow pages. I mean, there's, online, Rochester local PC shops.
Most PC shops, like Steve's shops, Mac Ave, mm-hmm. most PC shops will happily do what you want to do for you.
Beautiful. And you said that's Mac Ave, and where's Steve's place located? I guess
that's just one of many.
We're in Victor.
That's easy. Okay. Beautiful. Happy New Year's. Keep up the good work. Enjoy breaking up the monotony of a Saturday and listening to you guys.
Thank you. We appreciate
you
it.
You too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Moving data, moving programs is sometimes difficult.
Yeah.
It's one of the beauties of Linux.
Just about impossible.
Yeah, all the register entries that have to be copied, too.
Exactly. That's one of the beauties of Linux.
Mm-hmm.
Is you can actually create a list of all the programs on your machine and just go to the other machine and say, see that list?
Copy it.
Make it happen. Mm-hmm. And then as for the data, you would move that separately.
Yep. But that's the key thing for them, though, is the data. You know, it's, like you said, the documents, the folders, the music, and photos.
Well, and that's the other thing. People hate moving to a new machine. Because it's going to be different.
Yeah.
Right? Until you get it set up where all the icons are in exactly the right place and all the this and that, it's going to look a little different, run a little different, and that bothers people. I will disclose that I just bought a brand new machine for myself. My computer currently, the one I'm sitting at right now, is 8 years old. Ooh, I just noticed that in this lighting, you can definitely tell I have cats.
Yeah. But
anyway, the computer I'm on now is 8 years old, and there have been rumblings about tariffs and et cetera, et cetera. and I don't think this computer is going to last another 4 years. So I bought a new computer.
You're thinking ahead, just like Greg is, trying to be proactive until, oh, shoot, the thing won't turn on, and now I got to react. And, you know, and panic then. Whereas if you take the initiative to, you know, have a little foresight, you got 8 years out of it. Look forward.
Right.
Because
but what I have to do is I have to not only move all my data, but then I have to move all my programs, which in Linux, like I said, is real easy. But then I have to hook up pCloud, and I have to hook up connections to all my other machines and connections to my web services. And it's,
you're busy.
It's going to be a little bit of work.
Yeah,
and
you'll be.
I'm certainly willing to do that work. That's mm-hmm. not the point.
Right.
But it is going to be a little bit of work, and I haven't had to do that for 8 years.
Mm-hmm. But hey,
so I understand when people don't want to move to a new device. Yep. I get it.
But it's a small price to pay for your data.
Yeah, and well, exactly Microsoft recommends the LapLink software. Remember that?
Oh,
from
yeah.
Ages ago? That does allow you to plug a cable between the two machines, and it handles the file sharing all by itself.
Matter of fact, I think I still have it. It's this like roundish thing that it's got two cables, yep. and it comes with the software that you can plug into the two, and they'll LapLink in between each other.
Yep.
Wow, I haven't used that.
I didn't know LapLink was still around.
Me neither.
It looks like they're focusing on business and enterprise, where you need to image.
Oh, sure, that makes sense.
Yeah, you need to image hundreds of computers, but they still have a personal version available as well.
Yeah, I remember the old Mover. Blue and yellow cables.
PC Mover, yep.
Wow. Oh, nice.
The old days.
And, of course, that costs a little bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
There is
For some reason, it seems to be all in euros and pounds sterling on this machine.
mine too. There is I posted a link from Microsoft on how to transfer, and they have a discount code for LapLink. But I'm pretty sure that one only does files.
But like I say, he'd settings. Be smart to just pick up a terabyte hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
They are so cheap now, and you know. Take the time, just get mainly, like we said, all those three things, you know, the stuff that's important for them, copy it over to the terabyte hard drive, and then from there, copy it back over to this new machine.
We should point out, it's not just the terabyte hard drive, it's also the carrier
mm-hmm.
for the terabyte hard drive that lets you plug it into USB.
Yep.
And if you have USB 1 or 2.0, that transfer can be very slow.
Mm-hmm.
So be patient. But you don't care.
No.
Let it run overnight. Who cares?
Yeah, hook it up at night and just let it, you know, even going from the old machine to the terabyte hard drive, do it at night. And then the following night, transfer it from the terabyte hard drive over to the other laptop.
It's just drag and drop.
Mm-hmm.
Drag every folder over to that drive.
Yep.
Let it copy. Drag the next folder. Let it copy. When you're done with all your folders, and again, that's, you know, all the folders you use, documents, music, pictures, videos, downloads, whatever whatever you want, once they're all on that terabyte drive,
mm-hmm.
eject it safely from the old computer and plug it into the new computer. It pops up, drag and drop everything over from that, and you're done.
Yeah,
and then you have a drive to do automatic backups, because a lot of people will do a backup and then forget for 2 years, and then their computer dies.
Yeah,
and so you want to do automatic backups. We had a customer come in last week that their computer wouldn't turn on, and so all right, doesn't turn on. So we open it up; it's full of rice and sticky substances.
Huh?
Somebody spilled something in it. And tried to put it in rice to clean it up, and so we called the customer and, you know, pictures. It looks like there was a spill. I didn't spill anything in it. First thing they do, I didn't spill anything in it. We didn't say you did. It looks like there was a spill.
Yeah.
So their roommate finally admitted to spilling something into it and not telling them.
And put the rice in there?
And put the rice in there trying to fix it, but the computer won't turn on. It's a NAND flash soldered to the logic board, so the data's gone. Inaccessible.
Oops.
So, yeah, send it off to Drive Savers for a couple $1,000s, and they can probably recover it.
Mm. You know, a backup Yeah. Setting up backup takes half an hour.
$100 hard drive can back up everything on your computer.
Yeah.
And $100 hard drive and half an hour of your time, and you don't need to worry anymore. And we've talked about, Dave constantly talks about the pictures. Pictures are so important. And if you are a Google user, you can back up pictures to their drive.
Mm-hmm.
If you are an Amazon Prime customer, you have unlimited photo backup available to you. Why are you not using it?
Yep.
And in fact, I use both.
Yeah, why not?
Because as I say on our backup page, you don't have enough backups.
Mm-hmm.
You are not paranoid enough about backup. I don't care how paranoid you are. You are not paranoid enough.
And if you're worried about, you know, selecting stuff for as far as backup, remember, you don't have to worry about the programs. Because the programs, if that machine dies, you're going to have to reinstall programs anyways. It's the data, whether it's documents, folders, or, you know, well, music, you could re-download that. But the documents and photos, or any other, say you're using a CAD program and all that, again, that's a document. You know,
all the data you've created.
Yeah, anything that you've created, that's what you want to definitely focus on. Not, well, oh, well, I got to have this program and that program. No, because that program, if that hard drive dies, you're looking at reinstalling it all over again anyways, because you just can't copy a program off because of Windows, the registry, and everything else. It's very complicated.
Right.
It ain't happening.
Right. And that's, as Steve also said about the registry.
Mm-hmm.
If it's Windows, you have to do a reinstall. You just have to.
No way around it.
No way around it. But if you're using Linux, for example, it's easy to go from one distribution to another. If that program doesn't exist, there's something equivalent to it. You know, one of the things that people don't do is spend any time looking through their distribution files. When you run Linux, you have access to tens of thousands of programs, and people don't spend time looking at them. Every version of Linux has some sort of software center. You don't even have to go to the command line, although that's where I go all the time. But if you don't even have to have use the command line, you can go to the software center and do a search. So yep. If you're searching for software-defined radio, you can just type in SDR, and mm-hmm. it'll come up with all the programs that have SDR in that.
Yep.
Or you can type in the word software-defined radio, depending on the distribution you use. But you can do a lot of searching for stuff, and you will find equivalent programs. Here's the beauty of Linux. All of those programs are free.
Yeah.
So you can try one out. You don't like it? Delete it. Try a different one. You don't like it? Delete it. Try a different one. All of them are free to use anytime you want. So you're not stuck with anything, and you can change in a heartbeat to something else. Linux is really freedom
and
for the average user.
So many computers are so powerful these days that a lot of the things we used to think we needed a big, heavy computer for, you can be done in a web browser. Video editing, audio editing,
mm-hmm.
not just word processing. Commercial video editing you could do in a web browser.
Well, the other thing, too, is like I was stuck, you know, mainly when I was using the Windows, you know, the only thing that was stopping me was my program for doing finances, you know, the Quicken. And I did the search, and that's where I happened to stumble upon Money Dance, which is, I love it. Can't say enough about it. And it's dirt cheap, whereas Quicken is now going to a year, like Windows yearly subscription. And it's like, wait a minute. And I can run this on Linux. No yep. problem. It's great. You know, the screen is set up. It looks and feels just like Quicken. hasn't been much. And so even all my other stuff, as far as my ham radio stuff, there's versions for Linux. There has been for, I guess, for quite a while. A lot of the programs that I use for that are already in Linux. And I just installed them out of the, like you said, Nick, the library there. I did a quick search for a particular program. Oh, yeah, we got that. Bring it over. And it says, oh, by the way, there's also an update. Do you want to do that? Yep, let's do it. And it was...
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it was just like magic. You know, it just was all there and got me up and running. And like I said, solved the other problem as far as finding a solution for my Quicken, which also ties the Open Office. You can set it up to automatically go over to your bank and get the current statement and download it for you.
Yep. When my father-in-law passed, he was using one of the genealogy programs.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, he stopped paying for when he passed. But we had all these data. What are we going to do with them? Mm-hmm. I found a free genealogy program in Linux, found several of them,
mm-hmm.
Was able to read all of the data. It remained set up exactly as it was, kept all the relationships, all the pictures, all the added documents that he had done. Everything was all just there. Click. Here it is.
Wow.
And the program was identical to the one he had been paying for monthly, but it was free. I like free. I personally prefer free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and it does just, matter of fact, like I said, I'm even finding a few other features, like with the Money Dance, that I wasn't quite using with the old Quicken. But it's there, and it's like, oh, wow, you know, I could do this and do that, and setting up the reminders and everything else, and like I say, going off and grabbing my statement. You can set it up to, you know, check your bank whenever you want on a schedule and just have it update it, and oh, yeah, so those transactions are automatically fed into my Money Dance. So
that's something that you would pay for.
Yeah.
Monthly or yearly with Quicken.
Yep.
And you've got a one-time license for Money Dance.
Yeah, and they're great support. And it works on both Linux, Mac, and PC.
Well, and that's the other thing. Money Dance works on a PC. You can use it under Windows.
Yep.
You don't have to pay for Quicken.
Yep.
All right. Oh-ho!
The end.
Apparently.
You got it, done. Buddy.
All right, that music tells us that we are done. The first show of 2025, I didn't screw it up so far, is in the books. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank all the people who called in. We had great questions this week. Keep them coming. Please vote in the poll. We've got 62 votes so far, and over half of them are... or more popcorn, so that's great. But please vote in the poll. And we will see you next week with the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you? You deserve it.